either attacking it from behind or moving on to attack locations deeper within Night Elf territory, then surely the orcs knew Warchief could. A short distance later, Haldrissa turned to Danaea, her second in command. "I want 2 scouts to ride to the post, then report back, without being seen." Danaea summoned the riders needed, then sent them off. Haldrissa watched the pair first become 2 blurs, then vanish into the distance. She hid a moment of frustration. Her vision was not as sharp as it had been only a few months before. In fact, it seemed to have worsened in the past few days. "Weapons at the ready," she ordered the others. Danaea, who already had her bow out, repeated the order. They moved on, noticing nothing and growing more suspicious because of that. Haldrissa estimated the time the scouts would need to reach the post and get back to her, and knew that there was still quite a wait. Thus it was that the growl of a nightsaber racing toward them only minutes later sent her and her fighters into preparations for immediate battle. The beast was sorely wounded, arrows pincushioning its hide. That it had gotten this far was a credit to its stamina. Blood stained its claws and teeth, showing that it had not left the struggle without inflicting pain on its attackers as well. And astride it, very dead, was one of the scouts. Zanin let out an epithet and looked all for urging his cat forward. He was not the only one either. Haldrissa waved the eager ones back, not that she intended to hold off pursuit. Danaea already had the dying nightsaber beside hers. She looked over the rider and scowled.
"We will have to leave her here for the time being. We can retrieve her on the way back so that she can receive a proper burial."
Haldrissa nodded to her second. Danaea and another sentinel swiftly dismounted and removed the body from the suffering cat. Gently setting their comrade beside the nearest tree, they returned to the nightsaber. The cat panted heavily. Up close, the intensity of the wounds was more evident. There was blood everywhere. The nightsaber peered up at Danaea with eyes filled with pain. One of its sabers was broken. The wounded mount coughed violently, throwing up more blood. It was clear that nothing could be done to save the beast. Drawing her dagger, Danaea leaned down and murmured to the animal. The nightsaber gently licked the hand that held the weapon, then calmly closed its eyes in what was clearly expectation. Gritting her teeth, Danaea expertly slit its throat. The animal died instantly.
"Spread out," Haldrissa ordered as her second-in-command mounted again. "Zanin, you take those up that way. Danaea, take your group to the south. The rest, with me."
Moments later, the night elves cautiously moved into the area in question. Haldrissa's nightsaber sniffed the air and snarled low. The commander quieted her beast with a touch of her hand to its head, then slowly reached for her bow. An arrow struck the warrior beside her. The strike was a perfect one, piercing the throat. It had also come from above. Quickly knocking an arrow, Haldrissa raised her bow to fire. Before she could, though, 2 swiftly spinning glaives shot up in the direction from which the arrow had come. The arched, triple-bladed weapons cut a deadly swath into the foliage. A pained grunt escaped from the treetop. One of the glaives darted back out of the tree, returning to its wielder. The other reappeared a second later, buried in the chest of an orc. The enemy archer dropped like a stone to the ground, his slashed body sprawling. But even before the orc's corpse had the opportunity to settle, from out of the forest ahead charged nearly a dozen of his fellows, many astride powerful black wolves. Axes, spears, and swords raised high, the orcs plunged toward Haldrissa's group. The night elves wasted no time in meeting the charge. Haldrissa fired once at the first orc approaching, but what should have been a clear shot ended up only piercing the shoulder. The wound was not enough to even slow the brawny orc, who then tried to bury his axe in the skull of her mount.
Another shot from above hit a nearby nightsaber in the neck. The animal stumbled, sending its rider flying forward. An opportunistic orc leapt from his wolf and swung at the fallen night elf. The sentinel turned, trying to defend herself, but was too slow. The orc's axe bit into her chest near the collarbone. The wounded nightsaber sought to attack the orc, only to be confronted by the warrior's wolf. The two great beasts tore into one another with fang and claw, each seeking an opening. The nightsaber had some advantage in size, but the wound slowed it. Steering around the monstrous pair, Haldrissa fired at the orc. Up close, she could not miss. The force of the bolt as it sank into the orc's chest sent the dying attacker flying back several feet. Another arrow whistled past the commander's ear. Cursing, Haldrissa fired back at where she thought it had originated. Her arrow evidently missed, but it forced the orc in the tree to move more into the open, where a bolt from the south finished him. Waving her bow, Danaea let out a triumphant cry, then led her group in against the orcs. At the same time, Zanins surged in from the north. Steel met steel. Nightsabers clashed with wolves. Danaea had changed her bow for a glaive. She slashed through the throat of a slavering wolf as it seized her by the leg. Her sleek raven-colored hair, bound in a tail, darted like a whip as she looked this way and that for her next foe. The orcs fought savagely, even more savagely than Haldrissa had expected. They left themselves open at times, seeming to prefer simply to try to get to an enemy no matter what the risk. While by sheer force they kept the larger contingent of night elves momentarily at bay, the odds were clearly too great against them. Could it be? The commander started to realize, only to have to forego completion of the thought as another mounted orc dove in at her. Haldrissa dropped her bow and brought up her glaive, using the nearest of the curved blades to deflect the axe. Her arm shook as the two weapons rang together. The wolf dodged to the side of her nightsaber's claws in order to give its rider a better opening. The commander's cat twisted to protect Haldrissa, but the orc had already swung. The foremost blade cracked under the force of the strike. The upper half flew into Haldrissa's face. She felt stinging pain by her left eye, then her sight there vanished. A wetness spread over her left cheek, and she nearly passed out from shock. A part of her mind screamed, "The orc! Beware the orc!" One hand clutching her ruined eye, Haldrissa tried to focus on her foe. Through her tears she made out his general shape. He was nearly upon her, even with the nightsaber now doing its best to fend off the wolf. Haldrissa twisted the glaive in order to bring one of the remaining blades between her and where she thought the axe was. Her head pounded, and the outline of the orc faded. She knew she was going to die. But the killing blow never came. Instead, the nightsaber ceased its violent rocking, as if the battle between it and the wolf had come to a sudden conclusion.
"Commander!"
someone shouted in her ear. She recognized Danaea's voice.
"The orc! The orc is slain!"
A slim hand seized her weapon arm. As Haldrissa blinked away tears from her remaining eye, Danaea came into focus.
"Be still, Commander. You need aid, quickly. The battle is over. The orcs are slain to a warrior, their wolves perishing with them."
A prisoner would have been good to have, Haldrissa knew, but a capture could not always be accomplished in the midst of frenzied fighting. As another sentinel came around her blind side and began working on her wound, Haldrissa finally managed to better focus on the situation. One thing immediately came to mind.
"The outpost. We must reach the outpost."
She was forced to wait while they finished with her eye, and even then Zanin suggested that they turn around. Haldrissa began to feel like an old grandparent rather than their commander, and grew angry. The other night elves acquiesced to her orders, and the party finally raced toward the outpost, all expecting the worst. But as they neared the wooden structure, to their surprise, a pair of sentries stepped out from among the trees. They looked stunned by the party's appearance, especially that of the commander, who now sported a long cloth over the damaged side of her face. Before they could speak, Haldrissa quickly asked the outpost, "All is well." They glanced at one another in some confusion, one finally replying,
"Yes, commander. It has been very quiet."
"Were there other sentries posted in the trees behind us?"
"Two."
There had been no sign of either the pair or the other scout Haldrissa had sent. She had no doubts as to their fate.
"A scouting force," Danaya declared to her. "They managed to maneuver around the outpost without being caught, but the missing sentries must have run across them."
A dark smile crossed her features. "Well, they will not be ferreting out any secrets to pass back to their war chief. We have seen to that, and avenged our lost comrades as well." Zanin and the others seemed to agree with her, but Haldrissa remained silent. She thought of the fatalistic determination of the orcs as they had thrown themselves against impossible odds. Such an act was not extraordinary where orcs were concerned. They often reveled in showing their willingness to sacrifice themselves.
"But what were they sacrificing themselves for?" she murmured to herself.
"What did you say, Commander?" Danaya asked. The pain from her wound coursed through Haldrissa, forcing her to put a hand to her head. Still, the notion of what had truly happened burned deep.
"Send word ahead to the outpost. Have them survey the area carefully."
"You think there are more orcs?"
"No."
She wished she were wrong. That would help matters. They were too late, though. The attackers had done their part, giving their lives for the horde.
"No. By now they have slipped back through."
There had been forays by orcs in the past, but something about this particular one struck her as sinister. The horde had never sent a party this deep in this region, and certainly not one of such size. She would have to send word to the general as soon as possible. For months, Chandris and the High Priestess had been awaiting some act by the Horde that hinted of a change in the delicate balance between the two factions. Haldrissa now believed she had witnessed that very act.
"But what does this incursion augur?" the wounded commander wondered anxiously.
She had no answer. Still, whatever form it would take, the one thing Haldrissa did know was that there would be much, much more blood that had been spilled this day. Much more. Chapter 3. Gerard Shadowsong.
"She is dying. My Shellis here is dying,"
the male night elf blurted to the archdruid. Gerard Shadowsong's face was lined like no night elf's that Malfurion had ever seen. While some of those lines had probably been the result of Gerard's life away from his people, others were clearly more recent, and likely had to do with the unmoving female so carefully held in his arms. Gerard's hair and beard had silvered, a stark change from how Malfurion recalled him. Gerard had been younger than Malfurion when they had first met, more than 1,000 years, in fact, but the silvering and the lines made him look that much older than the archdruid. Malfurion wondered what the night elf before him had lived through since their last meeting.
"Gerard."
It felt so strange to Malfurion to say the name, the two not having seen one another in nearly 10,000 years.
"It has been a long time since we last met,"
the former commander and still legendary hero from the War of the Ancients murmured, his eyes hollow.
"Forgive me for coming to you like this."
Malfurion waved aside Gerard's apology. Looking over Shellisir, he saw how grave her condition was. I could try to heal her, but I think it best if we bring her straight to Tyrande, so that we have all options available to us. Quickly now. Gerard looked hesitant to surrender any part of his hold on his companion, but at last he let the Archdruid aid him. As the throng watched in absolute silence, the pair carried Chalasir toward the temple. The two sentinels at the entrance moved respectfully aside as the Archdruid neared. One gaped at the sight of Gerard. Even with the cropped beard and long loose mane, both utterly silvered now, there was something in his weathered face that remained absolutely recognizable to any who had seen him in the past.
"She will save you,"
Malfurion heard the one-time captain murmur to the still female.
"Tyrande will save you. She will speak with Elun."
Malfurion hid his frown. Chalasir felt extremely limp, and from the position by which he held her, the Archdruid could not tell if she breathed. She was beyond his power at this point, which only left Elun. Yet, how much would even the Moon Goddess do in such a drastic case? Through the corridors of stone and living wood they rushed. Some of the priestesses they saw quickly offered assistance, but the Archdruid understood that only his beloved would have the power to help Gerard's mate at this point. Her personal guard came to attention as Malfurion and his companions neared the sanctum she utilized in her role as High Priestess. One of the guards wordlessly opened the way. Malfurion noted how every set of eyes focused first on Gerard before taking in Chalasir. Everyone had long assumed that Gerard's Shadow Song had perished at some point during the past millennia, else why would he not have returned to his people during some of their most desperate moments? They were not even through the entrance before Tyrande met them. Gerard started to speak, but the High Priestess shook her head. She directed them to take Chalasir to a long sloping couch next to her, then bade the attendants without to close the doors. Her expression grave, the High Priestess went down on one knee next to the other female. Tyrande began murmuring a prayer under her breath, and her hands continuously passed over Chalasir's body. The light spread from the High Priestess to Chalasir. Gerard let out a hopeful gasp. The two males watched with anticipation as the soft silver light settled down over the stricken figure. Without warning, the light faded. Tyrande pulled back. A sound escaped her, one that Malfurion recognized from times in the past.
"Gerard,"
Tyrande said in a low voice as she rose and turned.
"Gerard, I am sorry."
"No."
He shoved past the Archdruid.
"
"I told her she could get help here. I told her you or Malfurion could save her. Why will you not save her?"
Tyrande halted his lunge toward Chalasir with a simple touch of her hands against his shoulders. Eyes more hollow, tears beginning to stream, the former guard captain from Lost Suramar stared into the High Priestess's sympathetic gaze.
"She had already slipped away. There was nothing that could be done."
He looked aghast.
"No. I brought her as soon as I could. I pushed for us to reach here."
His own gaze veered toward Chalasir.
"I did it then. I pushed her too hard. She would be alive if I had not—"
Tyrande shook her head.
"You know that is not true. Her fate was cast. She knows that you did all that anyone could have done. It was simply meant to be."
"Chalasir!"
Gerard dropped down next to his mate. He clutched her face to his shoulder. Malfurion quietly joined his own mate. They watched in solemn respect as Gerard rocked back and forth and whispered to his lost wife. Finally, Gerard looked back to his hosts. Tears still slid down his cheeks and into his beard, but his voice sounded stronger now, more resigned to the truth.
"We both feared that she would not make it. But we both agreed
that it was best. Yet, I remember from her tone at times, now that I look back on it, she knew the truth. She did this more for me than for her own life. She wanted me to come back here to be with others, not be alone when she passed.
You called her Shalasir, Tyrande replied soothingly. I thought I recognized her. She was a novice here for a time. We all assumed she had wandered away from the old city, and that some accident had subsequently befallen her, even though searches found no body. No one knew that she and you were together, though the timing of your mutual disappearances should have spoken volumes to us. Yet we never made the connection. We kept our love secret, mainly out of concern on my part. I had already considered leaving everything long before. I had grown disenchanted with the polarization of our society. Your druids. Forgive me, Malfurion. Your druids had been becoming more and more remote, spending most of their time away or in the Emerald Dream rather than sharing in the responsibilities of keeping our people safe and secure. The Archdruid said nothing. He had heard this from others, including Tyrande. The guilt for all those centuries of abandonment still remained with him. Gerard exhaled. And though I loved her with all my heart, I hoped that she would see the folly of being with me. I believed that if and when I chose to depart, I would save her from having to answer questions about my choice. Gerard, Malfurion began, but the other male continued, as if hearing nothing. Instead, she proved determined to follow my path, wherever it might lead. She always tried to do what I wanted, even when I tried my best to see to her happiness. Gerard kissed Shalasir's forehead. Little fool. First she wastes her life following me into the wilderness, and then she sacrifices what strength she has to ensure I return here, so that I will not be alone. Softly placing a hand on his shoulder, Tyrande said, You are always welcome among us. She knew that. She also seems to have savored her life with you, or else she would not have stayed with you all these centuries. We did have many moments of joy. She loved the wilderness, I admit. In some ways more than I did, even. I shall see to arrangements for her. She will receive proper rites. He looked up at her, then down at Shalasir again.
She is dead.
Still holding his beloved, Gerard rose. He accepted no assistance as with tender care he adjusted Shalasir's position on the couch. To all appearances, she was sleeping. It barely seems any time since the illness touched her. The High Priestess and the Archdruid looked at each other. With the loss of their immortality, the Night Elves as a race had begun to experience afflictions that they had only witnessed in others. There had been a few other deaths, and Shalasir's showed that there would be more and more as time went on, deaths that could not be avoided. I had heard rumors, Gerard went on, straightening.
It is all true, then.
We are mortal, are we not? After Malfurion nodded, the former guard captain grunted. Meaning no offense. But I think that a good thing. Even with this happening. His hands curled into fists as he looked at Shalasir. We were so damned complacent about our great station in the world, and our endless, jaded lives. And that is why the Legion nearly slaughtered us all. A different darkness spread across his weathered face, one that Tyranda and her mate recalled from the far past. Malfurion quickly stepped over to Gerard and deftly guided him from Shalasir.
You are exhausted. You need food and drink also.
How can I sleep or eat?
Shalasir would want you to take care of yourself,
Tyranda added from Gerard's other side.
And I promise you that I will spare no effort for her.
I should stay. The archdruid shook his head.
No. Give yourself the time you need to be able to better honor her.
I know where to find some healthy fare, and perhaps how to bring some calm to your heart. Once you have recuperated, you can return and help oversee the final arrangements. To his relief, Gerard acquiesced. However, he looked back at his mate one last time.
I would like a moment alone with her, if I may.
Of course.
They watched him kneel beside Shalasir once more. Gerard took her hands in his, leaned close, and whispered. Malfurion and Tyranda stepped out of the chamber. There they took the opportunity to briefly discuss another matter.
Varian is coming to the summit,
Tyranda quietly informed her husband.
So Chandris's contacts say. It worries me, though, that we still have no official confirmation from Stormwind.
We both know that if Chandris trusts her information, it is generally true.
Good.
One way or another, the news will filter to the other kingdoms. If Stormwind is attending, the remaining holdouts will rush to join.
He frowned. As to whether he is coming to ensure the success of the summit or to condemn it, we will have to wait and see.
If we do not hear official word from Stormwind before he arrives, it may be the latter.
Unfortunately, too true. Malfurion's frown deepened. But you could have told me all this when you initially contacted me.
There is more.
She described Elune's vision and what it had revealed. He brooded over the revelation for a breath or two, then asked,
You have faith, you could not be mistaken. The Mother Moon made it abundantly clear.
It makes sense in great part,
and yet not in other ways.
He brooded for a moment.
Leave this matter to me. I will see that somehow things come together. If it is indeed Varian Wrynn on whom the Alliance's future most depends.
Tyranda accepted his decision to take control of that situation with a nod. Then, also eyeing Gerard, she continued,
We have another, more personal situation here. Perhaps two.
Gerard left behind some unfinished relationships of significance.
Those will have to come to their proper conclusions without our efforts. There is so much more at stake. I welcome Gerard back, but his life is his own to master in the long run.
They glanced back into the chamber. At that moment the newly returned Gerard rose again. Malfurion and Tyranda heard him exhale deeply as he gave his Shalasir one last kiss.
Let us hope Chandris and his sister see it that way,
the High Priestess Riley returned under her breath as they moved to attend to their old friend.
Though I doubt they will.
Most Night Elves of military status utilized the training areas in the Warrior's Terrace to hone their skills. There they had the use of target ranges and dueling grounds. The Night Elves were respected by both their allies and enemies as strong and skilled fighters, especially General Chandris Feathermoon's sentinels. But Maiev Shadowsong was no sentinel, and considered herself far more skilled and dedicated than any of them, including their commander. Indeed, in her opinion, the sentinels knew nothing about dedication. and sacrifice. Her face was narrower than many night elves, and weathered. Scars marked her face, scars from both battle and torture. She had been warrior, jailer, prisoner, executioner. Her eyes held a fatalistic gleam. Her armor was more elaborate than that of a sentinel, with a thick breastplate, heavy shoulder guards, and high metal boots, all of a dark silver-gray bordered by a golden bronze. Wicked gauntlets ending in claws covered both hands, and even the draping forest-green cloak was lined with sharp blades that were not merely for show. A face-obscuring helm lay to the side of where she trained, with it a jagged, round blade known as an Umbra Crescent. There had been a title for what she had once been, what she still considered herself, though some no longer saw purpose in it. Those were the same people who did not sufficiently understand the dangers facing the Night Elf race, dangers against which the Sentinels were poorly equipped, both physically and mentally. Fortunately, Maiev had found others who still saw as she did, and so had begun recruiting and training the best of those to rebuild the elite force wiped out by Malfurion's brother. The elite force, known as the Watchers. For some 10 millennia, Maiev had been a Watcher. Their leader. The Warden, in fact. The Watchers, originally volunteers from the ranks of the Sisters of Elun, and later also chosen from those outside the temple, had been charged with the daunting task of acting as jailers for the traitor Illidan Stormrage, and later, other monstrous criminals from not just the Night Elves, but other races as well. As leader, Maiev had made Illidan her utmost priority, and utmost focus. No. In Maiev's view, the Watchers had been a far more dedicated force than even the Sentinels. Maiev practiced her skills, not in the Warrior's Terrace, but out in the forest beyond. There she could unleash the energy ever pent up inside her. This day she practiced with smaller blades, daggers, striking out at pre-selected targets while bounding through the area. One after another, the daggers sank deep into the centers of their targets, no matter at what angle Maiev threw them. It was not by skill alone that her aim was so perfect, though. Incentive pushed her as much. In her mind, each target bore the visage of a male night elf whose eyes were covered by cloth, as if he were blind. Sometimes the details of the face changed, but it was ever recognizable in her thoughts. She knew that face better than her own, having stared at it so much. In fact, her current exercise was also a futile attempt to eradicate the memory. But still she tried, slaying him again and again. That she had done so in truth did not matter. Whether as a cunning prisoner in the barrows or a demon seeking power over the world, Illidan's Stormrage would forever be burned into Maiev's fairy soul. Drawing the last dagger, Maiev lunged under a branch. Alighting onto a lower one, she brought her hand back for throwing, then spun around to face the intruder she had felt coming up behind her. At the same time, Maiev tossed the dagger up, catching it by the hilt as it came down. The tip ended up touching the throat of another female. To her credit, the newcomer flinched only slightly. Maiev nodded her approval. Neva was her best student. "Forgive this interruption," Neva said calmly, eyes never going to the hand that held the dagger under her chin. "I would not have disobeyed your command if it were not important." Maiev removed the dagger. "I trust your judgment. You know me better than anyone." This straightforward comment elicited a brief but odd look from Neva. Maiev's brow arched. "Why are you here?"
"I was crossing through from the temple gardens when I saw the gathering. The archdruid Malfurion Stormrage was there."
"Was he?" Maiev's memories coursed back to much younger days, when she had been a senior priestess of Elune. There again she saw Illidan Stormrage, though as a younger, handsome, but haughty figure, next to his twin brother, the future Archdruid.
Yes, the Archdruid had evidently arrived just a moment before I had. He stood only a few feet from where I did. He was staring at a male in a travel cloak. The male was carrying another, a female. She looked to be dying.
Get to the point. The other female gave a slight nod.
The Archdruid recognized the male. He whispered the name, which I was just barely able to hear.
Neva hesitated, then concluded,
"It was your brother's name."
Maiev revealed no reaction. She simply stood there as still as a statue. After several seconds, she finally blinked. Then, with deft ease, she spun and threw the blade at the final target. The strike was perfect.
"Geralt," Maiev muttered. "I am not mistaken, Warden."
"I did not think you were."
"So my brother has come back."
Neva bowed her head.
"I had thought him long dead."
"We were both mistaken, then." Maiev retrieved her helmet. "He will be in or near the temple. Probably in it."
"You are going to visit him?"
"Not at the moment.
I need to think."
Maiev suddenly paused. Her eyes swept over the trees to the region to her right. Neva followed her gaze, but saw nothing.
"Never mind,"
Maiev ordered her companion as the senior watcher put the helmet on.
"Let us go. I must see my dear, long-lost sibling." "But you said you were not going to visit."
Gerard's sister looked at her companion with narrowed eyes.
"I said I must see him."
Neva nodded her understanding. Without another word, Maiev bounded down through the branches toward Darnassus. The younger night elf leapt after. Despite millennia separating their ages, Neva found herself hard-pressed to keep up with her instructor. He watched the night elves leap gracefully out of sight, moving with an inborn skill that few other races could match, but which made him sniff in contempt. He had not meant to cross their path, but perhaps it had been for the best. While the news of which they had spoken did not outwardly seem of import, anything that in the least concerned Archdruid Malfurion Stormrage would be of interest to his own master. Information was always valuable, especially in these times. With a slight growl, the figure leapt in the opposite direction. He moved through the foliage with as much skill and grace as the slimmer but taller night elves had. Perhaps more, even. After all, they did not have long, long claws with which to better grasp a tree branch, or rend a foe when necessary.
Chapter 4. The Message from Ashenvale. Haldrissa had returned to her headquarters after her inspection of the outposts, with more than the loss of her eye causing her frustration. While all of the outposts had proven to be in top condition, some of the activity reports that she had received from the officers in charge did not settle well with her. Where in several places there should have been some nominal orc activity, nearly all had reported nothing whatsoever. And where there had generally been no activity, odd little occurrences, though nothing as drastic as what she and her retinue had encountered, had taken place. Reports of a few footprints here, a broken arrow with horde markings found there, a vanishing of game in another location. By themselves, they were hardly anything to think about, but when all were added together,
They hinted at some growing trouble. The commander sat cross-legged on a woven grass mat in her quarters. To her right, a toppled mug and a small drying pool of water marked an earlier failed attempt to adjust to perception problems due to her impaired vision. Haldrissa was doing better now, but still there were moments when her fingers had to hesitate before she was certain she was reaching for a parchment correctly. She stared at the array of reports from the various outposts, her remaining eye darting from one to the next. However, as Haldrissa looked at one to her farthest left, she suddenly realized that Danaea stood waiting there. Just for a brief moment, Haldrissa noted what she knew to be impatience on her second's part. That emotion quickly melted away, leaving only the steady expression of a sentinel lieutenant. How long Danaea had been waiting, Haldrissa could not say. The commander tried not to think of what would have happened if it had been the middle of combat, and rather than Danaea, it had been an orc standing in her blind spot. Haldrissa revealed no frustration with either her lapse or her second's impatience as she rose to meet Danaea's eye.
"What is it? You sent for me."
Haldrissa had, but it had slipped her mind. Simply nodding, she said, "I have gone over all the reports. I believe it urgent we send warning to Darnassus. The orc incursion near the one outpost was the most intrusive, but by far not the only one. They have pushed into the area before. You think this incident that important?" "Important enough to send a message to General Chandris immediately. Have a Hippogriff rider ready within a quarter hour." Danaea saluted and left. Haldrissa looked over the reports one last time. Then, taking quill to parchment, she wrote all she felt pertinent and how, in her opinion, it tied together. By the time she was done, Danaea had returned. "The rider is ready. I chose Aradria Cloudflyer." The commander nodded her approval. Aradria was an expert rider, perhaps the best in all Ashenvale. Sealing the parchment into a small pouch, Haldrissa again rose. With Danaea a step behind her, she strode to where the courier already waited upon a huge forest-green animal with the clawed forelegs and crested head of a bird of prey, a head also adorned with long, wicked antlers, and a body otherwise like the sleekest of stags. His wings were a brilliant orange like a setting sun. The hippogriff's eyes radiated fierce intelligence. These creatures were not property or pets, but rather allies. Riders did not control so much as work in concert with them. Aradria leaned down as the commander stepped close. She was even more wiry than Danaea. On the other side of the saddle were strapped her glaive and a quiver full of arrows. Her bow was looped over her head and shoulder. "No one sees this but the general," Haldrissa ordered as she handed the pouch to the courier. "None shall," Aradria promised. She saluted Haldrissa as she straightened. The courier thrust the pouch into a larger one attached to the curved saddle on which she sat. "Fly with all haste," the commander continued. "Beware the sea. Windstorm is the fastest we have here." Aradria patted the hippogriff on the neck. The winged creature nodded, his eyes gleaming in anticipation. "No one will catch him." With that promise, she urged the magnificent mount to flight. The others stepped back as Windstorm spread his broad wings and readily rose into the air. Watching the pair, Haldrissa felt a pang of jealousy. As commander, she rarely had the opportunity to ride such a mount. "I want to double the patrols, Danaea," she said once the courier and the hippogriff had become a blur. "Daytime and night. Especially night." "The orcs would be better off trying to infiltrate during the day," Danaea pointed out, indicating the time when most of the night elves still slept. "Which is why we need to pay special attention when it is night." Her second did not contest her judgment. Haldrissa dismissed Danaea, then returned to her quarters. They were sparse, little more than the mat and the necessary tools needed for her reports and such. Another woven mat, this one longer and thicker, served as her bed. Unlike some officers, Heldrissa did not pamper herself. She slept, as her soldiers slept. It will not take her long, the senior officer thought. It will not take Aradria long to reach Darnassus, not by air. She was glad about that. General Chandris would see her concerns and move to address them. Still, Heldrissa realized that there was yet need to build up the outposts beyond their current strength. As the weary commander lay down on her sleeping mat, she began calculating how to best rearrange her present level of troops. That further calmed her. Between her missive to the general and her own plans, the Horde was surely in for a dire surprise should it be planning a new attack. The orcs were nothing if not predictable in their overall methods. Satisfied and eager to let rest ease some of the pain returning to her eye, Heldrissa finally slumbered. Ashenvale would soon be secure again. The courier grinned as she and the hippogriff soared above the trees. Already deep into night elf territory, they both knew that they could save time skimming above the forest. Aradria had promised Heldrissa that they would get the report to Darnassus as swiftly as possible, and she and Windstorm had every intention of fulfilling that promise. Besides, they had a reputation to keep among the other riders and mounts. The hippogriff's powerful wings beat hard. The miles vanished behind them. Aradria left it to her companion to judge where and when he would need to rest. Experienced riders never assumed that they knew better than the hippogriffs themselves. The cool wind felt bracing to the night elf, and she knew that it touched Windstorm the same way. Peering at the landscape below, Aradria made a judgment call as to a change in direction that might cut down their time even more. She tapped the hippogriff on the left side of his broad, muscular neck, using a short series of touches to communicate what she thought. Such a method was far better than trying to shout against the wind. Without warning, the hippogriff rocked violently, his wings flapping in an awkward, jolting manner. As she clutched tight, the night elf glanced at one of the wings. Two thick bolts had pierced it, right near the muscle. Blood stained the brilliant plumage and also sprinkled the treetops below. Aradria looked at the other wing. There, a third bolt had likewise punctured the appendage, and more blood streaked across not only the feathers, but the sky behind. The shots were expert, so much so that the wounds kept the hippogriff from maintaining altitude. Windstorm's talons and hooves raked against the trees as he struggled to stay aloft. Torn leaves and bits of branches assailed the courier as the mount's battle against descent faltered more and more with each passing second. Ugh! A stray branch as big as her arm hit the night elf in the chest. Aradria lost her breath, then her balance. She fell back. Windstorm crashed among the trees. The collision was the final straw for the sentinel, who tumbled off the saddle. If not for the thickness of the forest canopy here, Aradria would have been dead. As it was, she slammed through one heavy branch after another, until the accumulation of debris falling with her created a barrier that put an end to her fall. She lay there, stunned, with her head and left arm hanging down. The wounded hippogriff became tangled in a mass of trees just a short distance ahead. Instinct overwhelming thought, Windstorm twisted and turned in an attempt to free himself. The saddle, caught on some of the branches, held him fast for a moment, until brute fury enabled the mount to rip free of it. The saddle dropped several yards farther down the tree. Aradria heard the hippogriff's frustration and caught glimpses of his struggles as she pulled herself up to a sitting position. From her shoulder she removed the bow, broken in the fall. Scratched, bleeding, and with one smaller finger bent at an unlikely angle, the night elf nonetheless thought only about her companion and the pouch. Pausing just to reset the finger in order to better her grip, she moved nimbly toward Windstorm. She had barely begun when the hippogriff, still turned awkwardly despite having freed himself from the saddle, broke through the stressed limbs holding him. The massive beast let out a squawk as he violently descended through one level of branches after another, finally vanishing from Aradria's sight. Her desperate gaze fixed on the saddle some distance below. Though she still wanted to help the hippogriff, Aradria knew that her duty was to retrieve the pouch. With one last glance in search of Windstorm, the night elf leapt toward the saddle. The branches held her, but barely. Even those not directly near where the hippogriff had crashed had been damaged by the falling limbs. Aradria made a swift calculation as to which would best suit her, then jumped to it. She landed just a few scant yards from the saddle. Only then did she see that the larger pouch was empty. The small one containing the missive now lay somewhere farther below, perhaps even on the ground. Aradria retrieved her glaive, slinging it on her gauntlet. After a moment's consideration, the sentinel also took the quiver of arrows along. From far below came Windstorm's angry cry. The night elf began leaping down from branch to branch. At last she spotted a patch of ground and the pouch. "Praise Alun," Aradria murmured. Ignoring the pain in her finger, she grasped another branch and descended farther. An arrow shot past her ear. She did not see the archer but estimated his position from the bolt's flight. Aradria whipped the glaive free and threw it. It cut through the remaining foliage and briefly vanished from sight. A gruff voice roared in agony. Seconds later, the glaive returned to the night elf's waiting hand. The blades were stained with fresh blood. Taking a deep breath, the courier dropped the last distance. She could still see the pouch. It leaned against the trunk of the very tree from which she had just descended. Aradria reached for it. From around the trunk burst a tusked orc, his huge axe already raised high to cleave the night elf in two. His thick mane of hair, bound tight, swung wildly as he ran at her, and the grin spread across his wide face revealed that while he still had tusks, several of his other teeth had been broken in past conflicts. The damage did more to enhance his already fearsome appearance. The courier brought up the glaive just in time to deflect the strike. Her entire arm vibrated from the force of the muscular orc's blow. Aradria gritted her teeth as she fought not to cede her position near the pouch. The grinning orc slashed away at her again. Every bone in the already injured night elf's body screamed, yet she held her place. Still, she knew that the impasse could not last. More orcs would surely join the fight. When her foe raised his axe for his next swing, Aradria retreated a step. The orc's grin widened as he took this action as evidence that the duel was tilting more in his favor. Aradria threw the glaive with all her might. The distance was not much, but her determined effort gave the triple-bladed weapon the force it needed. One curved blade buried itself deep in the orc's chest. The green-skinned warrior stumbled. Although he was not dead, the wound was a grave one. With his free hand, he tried to pull the glaive free. The night elf barreled into him, pressing the glaive deeper as her opponent staggered back. At the same time, she reached up to the quiver and grabbed one of the shafts. Aradria shoved the arrow through the orc's throat. The orc let out a gurgling sound. Despite dying, he clutched the night elf tight. The two fell to the ground. She struggled to free herself. Not far off, she heard movement that did not sound like a forest creature. Anticipating more orcs, the courier finally managed to shove the body away. Unfortunately, she could not immediately free the glaive. A rustling of brush made her look over her left shoulder in time to see three more orcs racing toward her from behind the nearby trees. Aradria tugged hard, the glaive finally coming out with a grotesque slurping sound. She whirled to face the trio, already aware that she had little chance against them. Then, two more orcs stepped into the area from the opposite direction, cutting off what little hope she had of still fleeing with the pouch. Aradria surreptitiously glanced at the object. There was still a chance to at least destroy the contents, if she could buy herself a few moments. With a brief, murmured oath to Elune, the Night Elf charged the nearest three. Her audacity served her well. The orcs hesitated, all but certain that she had intended to go against the pair. Aradria threw the glaive as she lunged. The spinning missile forced the trio to scatter. The glaive soared past the orcs, then arced back, but not to the Night Elf's previous position. Rather, both it and she converged on the location where the pouch lay. But she had underestimated the swiftness of at least one of the other two orcs. Even as Aradria caught the glaive, he reached the pouch. Clutching the prize in one hand, the brutish warrior turned to battle her. The courier swung the glaive at him, then suddenly kicked. Although the orc outweighed her, the force was still enough to shove the air from his lungs. Aradria pressed her attack, hoping to take him down and retrieve the pouch. Much to her dismay, the other nearby orc came between them. His intrusion enabled his comrade to recover, and both dueled with the tiring Night Elf. Aradria knew that the other three had to be closing. She was trapped. Suddenly a deep squawk shook the combatants. A huge form shot past the Night Elf. Mighty talons tore through the torso of one orc. Though bleeding in many places and clearly favoring one front leg, Windstorm was yet a tremendous threat. The orcs could not get past his sharp beak. His body blocked them from reaching Aradria. The Night Elf used his timely entrance to beat back her other two adversaries. She then took a quick look at the Hippogriff, trying to estimate his condition. Windstorm could not fly, that was clear from his one badly drooping wing, but perhaps he could still carry her from the struggle. First, though, she needed the pouch.
Windstorm!
As the Hippogriff responded, Aradria gestured at the orc with the stolen prize. The huge beast might not be able to fly, but he could leap very well. Using his talons, he scattered the two orcs near him, then turned and made a tremendous jump over Aradria. The other orcs backed away at his landing. Windstorm ignored the one without the pouch. The Hippogriff snapped at the key warrior, but that orc refused to give up the pouch even in the face of such a threat. At the same time, Aradria moved up, hoping to attack the orc while he was distracted by Windstorm. Windstorm thrust his head forward, his beak opened wide. A spear caught the Hippogriff in the side of the chest. Windstorm let out a startled cry and teetered. In doing so, he collided with his rider, bowling her over. The world spun as Aradria rolled. A horrific pain shot through her chest. She almost blacked out. A nerve-wrenching keening cut briefly through the agony. Aradria heard a moist, thwacking sound, then Windstorm's shriek. A moment later the ground shook as something heavy and limp crashed next to her. The pain consumed her, until finally there was nothing left. One of the orcs with whom Aradria had been battling started to lean over the Night Elf's still form. Blood seeped from a deep wound near the courier's left lung, where one of the curved blades from her glaive had pierced her during her roll.
"Why bother?" another orc questioned. "The wound's deep. She can't be alive."
"If she is," rumbled the deeper voice, "she deserves a warrior's death for such determination against impossible odds."
A shadow passed the second orc, the shadow of a much brawnier warrior than he. One hand, brown rather than green, gripped an axe more suited for two hands in combat. The sharply curved axe head was massive, well-worn, and permanently stained with old blood. One of its most distinctive features was the many small holes in the head near the handle. Other orcs gathered in the area, their numbers totaling just over a dozen. Three bore injuries that indicated a previous encounter with the Hippogriff. The warrior who had retrieved the pouch presented it to the leader.
"I saw no breathing. She is dead. This was what she fought so hard for, great war chief."
The leader hooked the huge axe on his back, then took the pouch. Because he was a Magar orc, his skin was brown, not green. His jaw was broader than that of most orcs, and from it jutted a pair of thick tusks with points as sharp as daggers. Unlike the others in the party, he was bald. He wore shoulder